Welcome to another edition of the Puro Pinche Primos.
Hola, primo, primas. We are back. We are the Puro Pinche Primos. I'm your primo, Luis Velasquez. That's your primo, Christopher Castello. It is March Madness season. There was a lot of stuff going on. My bracket is busted like you wouldn't believe. So much hard work I put into that, putting that bracket together. And it's been killed off by white dudes that play at Oakland, shooting all over Kentucky. But primo, how you doing? How's your week been since last time we talked?
All good, man. I think there's... looking at the brackets, I remember being shocked by things that you put into to play. And those are not the things that have been the most shocking about the actual outcomes. I mean, I'm actually really curious as to what you think is the, like, the biggest stories or, like, shocking upsets that have come up. We know that there's always going to be upsets. There's upsets at every stage of the tournament. But what really stood out to you as far as teams that, I guess, either you didn't expect to be here or teams that just let down in a way that was just, like, unheard of? Because you brought up the Oakland, and that's been the story because of the three-point shooting in that game.
Yo, that dude.
And also, obviously, because of Kentucky going down. And again. Maybe, like, Calipari. Right? Exactly. And so, you know, let's talk about that particular player that showed up and showed out for Oakland in that tournament.
Yeah, what is it? I can't even think of it. Let me look his name up real quick. He just looks like 30-year-old dude at the YMCA who's balling out at the YMCA, right? Like, that dude.
Yeah, the comment that I keep seeing is when future accountants ball on lottery picks.
Yeah. Yo, he shot, like... That dude shot lights out, right? He had 10. I apologize to this man who earned the respect of me knowing his name. John Golkey. Jack Golkey. Jack Golkey shot 10 three-pointers. And, like, I mean, he put on his best Caitlin Clark impersonation that game. And he came out of nowhere. And this is where I think I went wrong when I went through my brackets, right? And hopefully I remember this for next year, that I have to realize is this is a new age in basketball, right? This is the transfer portal basketball. And I think the problem with Kentucky and Calipari, and even in his interview after the game, he's like, I'm not going to change. You're not going to win with all freshmen. You're just not.
Absolutely.
In today's game with the transfer portal, this dude's like, Golkey is like 25 years old, right? So you literally got kids versus adults, you know?
And so I think that's one of the things too, that, like, even you could see the difference between a lot of, like, potential NBA players who are freshmen versus grown men. And we also know that, like, that age gap between 18 to 25 is the difference many times of, like, 25 to 30 pounds, and also just, like, a physicality and, like, maturity that a 25-year-old in the NCAA tournament is trying to put on a show against Kentucky. And a lot of freshman Kentucky kids are probably just trying to make sure they maintain the game and keep a victory over an underdog team. And that mentality will get you sent home in a tournament like this one. I think one of the things I wanted to bring up too is just that, which I didn't realize until I started kind of, like, going backtracking, but the upset of Dayton and the Nevada game.
Yeah.
Right. They were down 17 with, I think, a 7.5 left. Dayton was, and they went on a 24-4 run to upset Nevada.
Shout out to them. Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. It's going, like, you know, again, we talked last time, like, my, like, this is what I have two TVs going on, right? I've got the living room TV is kids, right? I let the kids have that TV. We recently got a new TV in the living room. And so that TV that was in the living room is now, like, we had it, like, who knows how to get rid of TV? Do you know how to get rid of a TV? Like, I can't. Like, and so it was just kind of set to the side, right? And I was like, let me just put this up in the dining room. And so I got that TV up in my table in the dining room. And I've got the men's basketball tournament on that TV. And yesterday I had the women's basketball tournament in my room. There are like 10 games going on at once. My wife gets home from work and she's like, what is going on? What is going on? How much basketball can somebody watch? And so, but anyways, just to reiterate that fact, like, you can't be stuck in the past, right? I don't believe you can be stuck in the past as far as I don't think that you can be stuck in the past anymore, right? And I think what is going on with Kentucky, and he just hasn't, Calipari is old school. And, you know, he won all his championships off the back of freshmen.
And I think, you know, the thing about Kentucky, too, with Calipari doing that is that they're used to that system of, like, rent for a year before guys go into the league. And you brought up, like, transfer portals. I think the NIL stuff is going to shift that, where guys aren't necessarily going to just go to Kentucky because it's Kentucky. They're going to go to places that are going to pay them the money. But on top of that is that you brought this up when we were talking college football, which I didn't even think about, which is – and then you also brought it up with Caitlin Clark, which is – people were going to be more likely to stay in college getting NIL money than they would have without it, or they're looking to move into the league, whatever sport that may be. And I can't blame them for that. Like, I mean, I think just recently there's a new podcast with LeBron James, JJ Redick.
Yeah, shout out to that.
Maverick Carter, LeBron's business partner, longtime friend, brought up that, like, that podcast is for, like, basketball connoisseurs, right? Because they're talking deep basketball strategy, and it's not for just, like, talking about, like, what's happening in current events. And so you hear the things that those guys talk about, and the reason I bring that up is because in one of those episodes, LeBron brings up how when he went into the league as an 18-year-old, he had friends that were, like, in college playing ball and were like, yo, come out to these parties. And, you know, if you're a college kid,
yeah, he was talking about being disciplined, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you're a college kid who's already making, let's say, close to $1 million a year in that college setting, like, there's a lot of things being thrown at you, and people, and that I'll leave it at that, that, like, it's really hard to leave that environment. You've got money and notoriety, and you're playing in that level. And, you know, like, in my undergrad, I went to St. John's, and that's a really small school population-wise, it's a big school when you're talking about college basketball. And I remember, like, the idea that someone was one of the basketball players, like, just the way in which everything kind of bent to those guys was like, whoa, like, this is not an environment that you would want to leave. And so when we're talking about Calipari, like, I don't think he fully recognizes that, like, he's not at the same advantage that he was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And I think that's the same thing that pushed Nick Saban out of coaching in college football, right? So there is a really big shift, and I know that you're against coaches who stay the course or don't change the way that they look at, because you're constantly hating on Greg Popovich, which we'll talk about later. But I do want to say that, you know, if you can't teach an old dog new tricks, then that dog is going to die probably a lot sooner than they would have. And Calipari may be out of there pretty soon if he keeps getting ousted in this way. I think it's Kentucky's got one tournament win in the last 5 years. Is that
Yeah, they've had all the upsets in the first round, right? They've, like, St. Mary's they lost to. Lost to Oakland. The last 4 years they can't get out of the first round.
Yeah, that doesn't keep your job in a place like Kentucky, no matter how storied of a career you've had.
Yeah, I think the problem is his buyout is really big, and so I think this year they've already been trying to talk about, you know, him leaving and stuff. But
it's cheaper to keep him.
Cheaper to keep him right now, and like he like for what he is, like he's still getting these recruits, right? Two, he had, I think he had, five guys in the top 25 coming out of high school.
Yeah,
recruited to Kentucky, so he's a great recruiter. He is getting these guys in. The problem is, it's a different game now. Like, you're not winning off of straight talent now. You're not. You can't even go out there with the John Wall and Cousins or out there with the AD and just out-talent everybody. You're not going to do that. And then it shows, like, they weren't even ranked that high according to Kentucky standards, right? They came in ranked third, and they were the last tier of the thirds.
And I think this is one of the things that exposes the new ways of playing basketball, because obviously, like big name schools adjust to the way the NBA is playing, right? Because they're getting their guys ready to get drafted. And one of the things that I think it exposes is the idea that like high percentage shots matter in college basketball, where there's not the same style of play as far as like consistency from players. And so 2 points under the basket is a lot bigger in college ball than it is in the NBA. And you're not going to have a lot of freshmen or even just college players in general hitting that three in the same way or having the same skill set and adjusting to playing, shooting threes nonstop throughout a game as you are of guys in the NBA. Because we got to recognize how many players are actually in the NBA and how many jobs that really is when we're talking about the world of basketball. And you have so many college players that want one of those spots, and you're just not going to get
them. Yeah, absolutely. And then let's go ahead and move on. Another upset that happened yesterday was Yale. Yeah, Yale beating out Auburn. That killed my bracket. I had Auburn like going to like the Elite Eight. But shout out to Yale. It's a big story here. I'll tell you why. In Idaho, apparently Yale did not travel their band.
Okay.
And they're playing in Washington. And so they reached out to the University of Idaho band. And the University of Idaho band is out there pretending to be Yale's band. They learned all their music, learned all that.
Are they wearing Yale
stuff? Yeah, they're wearing Yale like colors. Whoa. Yale, like they're just, and they're not hiding it. There's a bunch of stories about it. And this isn't the first, like this happens a lot to teams that don't have enough money to travel their band all the time. And so I don't know why Yale doesn't have enough money, but you got Yale beating out Auburn. That was a big That was a crazy game. Came down to the wire. Auburn was one of the teams that everybody had on as like, watch out, this team can make it to the Final Four. They big time disappoint. Duquesne 11 seed beat BYU, and that one, apparently I've been in Idaho for way too long because I had BYU going all the way to the Elite Eight. And
being that tight, that confident in a BYU team definitely is a regional thing that has rubbed off on you.
Well, listen, I went by the numbers, okay? That's what I did this bracket this whole time. Here, I got the numbers right here. BYU was ranked 20th in scoring offense to Duquesne's 246. Now, Duquesne had was ranked 33rd in defense, and BYU was 108. But BYU was ranked 22 in rebounds, 81st in field goal percentage. I'm telling you, next year I'm going to keep this format, but I'm going to add the average age of the team on there and see if that makes a much more difference.
That makes sense, right? When we're talking about college ball.
Yeah. Any other big stories that we missed out of the men's bracket here? I mean, I still think one thing that I've always said about the men's bracket is like the cream always rises to the top. So the first weekend is usually all about, you know, Cinderella stories and doing all that. And sometimes it even goes into the second weekend. But usually when it comes down to, you know, come down to the Final Four, usually like the big dogs are there. And so UConn was absolutely dominant against Stetson. So they'll still be there. Houston was dominant against Longwood, and we wanted to talk about that story. That coach is crazy. So Houston was dominant over Longwood, right? And we were trying to talk about that story. The Longwood coach, I wish they had won that game. But you want to talk about a little bit about that coach and that situation that happened?
Oh, I think you're talking about that's Long Beach State University.
Yeah, that was Long Beach State. That's my bad. My bad. Long Beach State, yeah. And they went up against Arizona. Yeah.
Yeah, Long Beach State, I think it's just this like lesson about how sports teaches you life lessons, and just like that basically that coach was fired before the season ended and was told that he was going to be let go after 17 years of being the Long Beach State University head coach. And then within, I think, 3 or 4 days, they actually slid into the tournament in like a very unlikely fashion and made it, and basically ended up then having to like, they let him know that they would let him finish out the season out of respect. And then he makes the tournament and is basically already fired, right? And has to coach his team through that. And the kind of like, I think it speaks a lot to just life, but also just like what it is to be a coach, right? Or a leader of other people, is that sometimes you have to like humble yourself to the point that even your bosses or superiors or however you want to label them, recognize your own sense of professionalism and maturity, because then now they are in a position where they're embarrassed and you now have an opportunity to embarrass them based off of what they've done to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what kind of resolve that takes, right? And particularly, you know, I think in working as a coach, you know this better than I do, is like you'll have a player that does something or says something that is not okay and have to decide for the betterment of the team what your reaction is going to be and your either treatment of that particular situation or player, or how you're going to manage that to set precedent for what the culture of a team really is. And that coach, to his credit, right, has like, because he immediately was asked that in his interview going into the tournament when they're like checking in on like press conferences with teams, and his like remark was like something that I just thought was like really like amazing, that kind of needs to be studied with when it comes to like how to deal with a situation. And I'm gonna read the quote from that coach, but one of the things that he did mention in like a joke was that like that he didn't have to answer any of their questions because he's working for free that day.
Yeah.
Right. And kind of got like lightened the mood around that. But he described it as kind of like being just like a surreal experience. And it's like almost like being part of the like Twilight Zone. But I thought what he did say that really like stood out to me. And this is a quote from head coach Munson. And I'm sorry, Dan Munson from LBSU, but he said, "I think life is life. Some of it is good and some of it is bad. How you pivot through it defines who you are. I'm hoping that people look at me and say, hey, he had a great job. What are we feeling sorry for him? He had 17 years driving that car. It was a great ride." And the great point that he makes about that whole experience of being a head coach, and though he says, "I knew that the car was leased. I mean, they wanted the keys back. It's not insured this week, but I still get to drive it. I'm going to keep it on the road, the road to the Final Four, and I'm going to try to keep it on there." And so for me, it just was like this moment of like, how do you...
Yeah, that was like, awesome. That was awesome.
Yeah, like not take shots at the school, or how do you not like find a way to like make it about you, right? And I think that those are things that come with also like coaching experience, that he recognizes like, not only probably this is not going to be great for his team, that this is a distraction, but also as a professional, like, it, depending on how he acts right now in this moment is going to determine his next job. And he's going to bounce back from that. And he probably will bounce back much higher than he would have had he, one, not made the tournament, but two, had not handled it with such grace. And so in these moments, I'm always just like, this is where, like, the things we talked about before of, like, talking trash, which I'm also for, but how your arrogance plays in the long-term span of your career is, like, really, really interesting to me when it comes up in sports and in anything else. But I thought that was just, like, a really great story from the tournament and just something that how we relate sports to life.
Yeah, definitely. I think he has, like, kind of you said, I think he upselled himself. That was that, I hadn't heard that quote. I hadn't heard him say that. I did hear him. He was on the Dan Le Batard show earlier this week, and he kind of had that sentiment of just like, look, man, don't feel sorry for me. Don't, you know, like, I loved it here, and I'm happy for these guys. And what kind of guy would I be? What kind of coach would I be if I'm just, like, you know, not humbled and just pissed off and you know, just, I'm just going to preach, you know, practice what I preach to these guys all year and just have fun and play basketball. So shout out to them. And he's probably, like I say, he's probably going to a better school now, right? He's probably, he's probably upselled himself and he's going to go to a better school. Just a couple other things that I see here in the men's basketball tournament. The one thing that I did correctly so far is I have predicted James Madison being in the Final Four.
Yes. Right? And they're still winning.
And they upset Wisconsin yesterday. They got a big game against Duke tomorrow. So I will be a big James Madison fan here on out, because I think, again, the numbers, if I can bring up the numbers on why I choose James Madison. But where are you, James Madison?
We'll reach out. Aside from the fact that they went, what, 31-3?
Yeah, they went 31-3. They're in the Midwest. Where are
they? Yeah, they're in definitely the top right bracket in the South.
Oh, they're in the South?
Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
They're,
right. They're 10th in scoring offense. They're 94th in defense. They're 40th in rebounds. They're 26th in the country in field goal percentage. 45th in defensive field goal percentage. Turnover margin, they're 14th in the country. They're just like, there wasn't anything that they absolutely were crap at, right? There's a lot of teams that are really good at offense, but really bad on defense. Really bad at defense, really good at offense. And according to the numbers, like, they're just even keel across the board, right? And the only thing was, of course, their strength of schedule, which was 153 in the nation. But Wisconsin was 9th in the nation as far as strength of schedule. So, yeah, I look forward to seeing them play out. But, Primo, let's move on to
I want to bring up one last story. What you got? In this tournament. Because I think this is the things that we live for in sports, but particularly in the – is we didn't bring up the big major controversy in the Kansas-Samford game, which you had Samford winning that game, and looks like they should have won that
fucking
game.
Block. It was a block.
Based on that really terrible call from the chase-down block from behind, which is like even more difficult to pull off than what we see, like, from, like, LeBron and, like, plays in the NBA. But he got the ball, full ball, as the player went up and got called a foul. And that pretty much sealed the victory for the Kansas Jayhawks to move on. This was my conspiracy theory of that moment, which I don't know the timing of this or anything. But my thought was, what time did Kentucky lose that they were like, yo, we cannot also have Kansas lose?
Well, here's the thing too. Like, Kansas, their top two players were out from injuries, right? So they're number one and number two on Kansas, which is why everybody was picking Samford for this. Was Not only was Stanford a good team by the numbers, but they're, you know, Kansas have been struggling and their top two guys were out. But I mean, I'm here for conspiracy theories. I don't know if Kansas isn't really like popular as far as like must watch team in basketball anymore. They don't have any, like, they don't have a top 20 player in the country. But yeah, like, that was, I wish somehow, some way, like, plays like this need to be able to be replayed, right? They just,
yeah.
You have to be able, like, you can't affect games like that as refs.
Yeah, you can't have games be decided by one play.
Right.
Where, and particularly in a tournament, right? Like, there's things that, like, they come up in, like, a seven game series. It's plays in, like, in a regular season game. But in a tournament, particularly when the schools have such great disparities between them, you got to give these underdog schools a chance to win, particularly in a close game like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Particularly on a very clear call in the replay that it's, like, it's not even close.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, shout out to Kansas for winning that game. They move on, but I see you being out of there real quick. Their team doesn't look, they're just not as deep as they used to be. But we'll carry on with the men's basketball next week as we go into the Sweet 16 next week, Elite 8. It'll be crazy to see who's left. Now, to me, Primo, without a shadow of the doubt, the number one tournament going on is the women's tournament. That tournament is full of stars. The game is a lot better. I'm way more excited to watch the women play than the men. And just because, look, first off, like, the women's basketball game in general, all in all, has been shooting up, right? And I don't want to say, you know, I don't want to give us any credit here, Primo, but we have been on this bandwagon from the beginning of our podcast, right? I believe our first podcast we did was during this time, and we were shouting out Reina Perez, right?
Yep.
And we started getting on this boat of women's. Like, this women's bracket, this women's tournament is outstanding. You've got stars, right? Caitlin Clark, of course, is the star of all stars. She's the number one basketball, college basketball player, men or women, right now. To me, just number one.
Yeah.
But,
and will be the number one pick for the Indiana Fever
and the Spurs.
WNBA draft.
And the Spurs. Okay. She's going to play both. With Becky, she's going to be Brecky with her. She's going to do both too. But, anyways, what are you looking forward to? As far as the women's game, who do you think is going to come out on top?
For me, it's really hard to go against South Carolina. I feel like South Carolina is a team that just, like, they have all the pieces. They know how to play together. There's a culture there that is consistent and keeps a high standard. Coach Staley clearly is, like, someone that everyone can get behind. I don't see how, like, you know, pending, like, any possible injuries, of course, and that's, like, in any sport, but I don't know how South Carolina loses in this tournament if we're talking about, like, health remaining the same. So I'm not really sure, like, who else can contend with them in a way that is actually, like, a full team. Now, obviously, we know that in college basketball especially, a player has, like, a very special game, and that can change the dynamic of a tournament or of a bracket. But I don't know that Caitlin Clark can move this, like, full Iowa team through an entire tournament on her own. And I would imagine that along the way, there's going to be teams that try to, like, play physical with her. And also there's going to be places where, you know, they're going to focus in on her and force other people to beat them. And I don't necessarily know that Iowa team can pull that off against some of those really strong teams that you mentioned, where there's a lot of really powerhouse schools in the women's game.
Yeah.
Who do you have winning the whole thing?
I mean, I'm with you. I have South Carolina winning the whole thing. And then they're just a total complete team. And then what I like about, first off, is Dawn Staley. I think she is the number one coach in college basketball, men or women. Like, she, the way she has turned that program around, when, like, this, what this is to me, this is when she went to South Carolina and South Carolina wasn't doing anything, right? Mm-hmm. She has turned that whole program around, and they are just a complete team. They have a They don't have a top-tier star on that team, right? They do have, name, Camila Cardoza, who is the center on their team. She's a senior. I look forward to what she's going to do. But, it's not star-led on that team. It is a team. Let me just show you the numbers here. I've got South Carolina is number two in the country as far as bench. They're number five in the country as far as field goal percentage. Number one in defensive field goal percentage. Number four in rebounds. Number 25th in scoring defense. Fourth in scoring offense. Third in three-point percentage. And they have the third toughest schedule. Like, they're just dominant in every aspect of the game.
They do everything right.
They do everything right. And barring, like, the only thing that I can see that happens to them is somebody is on fire. Like, they have to have a really bad game themselves, and somebody on the other team is on fire, right?
Yeah, you're right. Because they can still make up for a Caitlin Clark going off.
Right.
But they would also have to
be playing like a bad
combination.
But, I mean, what I look forward to now is, like, man, I don't know. The women's basketball game is what men's basketball was, men's college basketball was in the 90s, right? When we knew these stars, like, we knew them from freshmen coming on up, right? We knew. And let me just, the number two person in the country behind Caitlin Clark right now is Juju Watkins, freshman out of USC. She's a baller. She's turned around USC. She's number one. They're a number one seed. They're probably third.
Who I'm rooting overall against, because you know who they're going against today.
A&M Corpus Christi?
Yep. gotta root for the Islanders out of Corpus Christi.
Shout out to the Islanders. But then you got, I think I have found my favorite player. I think after, first we started with Reyna, right? And then, Caitlin Clark came in and she's just all over the place. She's the queen of all basketball right now. And as she moves on to the WNBA, last night, Primo, I don't know if you saw this, there is a freshman center out of Iowa State, Audie Crooks.
Yes, yes.
Put up 40.
40. Yep.
18 for 20 from the field goals. In Utah, I have not seen low post fundamentals since the Mr. Fundamental himself, Tim Duncan. Right? Like, she's 6'3". She's got Tim Duncan moves, and she's in the shape of Big Baby Davis. Okay? Like, she is thick, okay? And, like, don't mess with her down there. And how she gets some of these shots off, because she's playing down there, and a lot of these other women are taller than her. But how she gets these moves off, she's got pump fakes, she's got pivots, she was killing it. She first came on my radar. Jesus. She first came on my radar last week or 2 weeks ago in the Big 12 finals against Texas. And I was like, who is this woman here? And she's just dominant. She's awesome. So she may be my new favorite player. Again, and then we've got a prima herself, okay? Big money. Prima. Hannah Hidalgo freshman point guard for Notre Dame, okay, is an absolute star. You will see her today as we record this. She's a baller. She's out, like I said, she's a freshman. There's just so many stars right now. You have, to me, you have Caitlin Clark, and then like the next, probably like three out of the next five players are all freshmen. And they're building up. So I look forward to today. Today's a big day. You've got Caitlin Clark playing today. Juju Watkins playing today. Cameron Brink out of Stanford is playing today.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So Cameron Brink, right, in Stanford, they're going against that Iowa State team that you just brought up.
Yeah.
And those are places where stars are against stars. And I think the women's bracket is really interesting that you brought up, was just like how much, you know, you have stars all over the place, but then you also have these brackets that put like potentially really big schools against each other along the way. And I thought that seemed to be like part of the like controversy too, in where people got seated, and like in which regions they got seated, right? Because I think, who is it that like, is it LSU is in the same bracket as Iowa?
Yeah, yeah. And they're struggling.
The same, yeah. Yeah, in the same bracket, and then also in the same bracket as, who else is in there? Louisville.
Yeah.
Who actually went down against Middle Tennessee, and now is going to play against LSU.
Yeah, so yeah, that, which I had on my bracket. I had Middle Tennessee coming out of that game.
Which also was a drama game because of the transfer player from from Louisville that went to LSU.
Yeah, Kaylee Van Lith was from Louisville. We're all looking forward to her playing her old team, but that didn't happen. And then you can't look. Shout out to the Horns, Hook'em Horns. They also are a number one seed. They have a freshman themselves in Madison Booker. They kind of went through a little bit of ups and downs this year. They came out on fire, Texas did. Their number one star, who was pushing Caitlin Clark at the time. At that time, it was Caitlin Clark, and then it was Rory Harmon as the second best player in women's basketball. She tears her ACL in December. And then it took a while for Texas to figure out what we're going to do. And sure enough, Madison Booker has come up and just been a star. And she's led the team to a number one seed, first time in women's basketball history for the University of Texas. So shout out to them. They're going to be there when it comes to the end. Yeah, man. I mean, just I'm excited. I can't wait. I can't wait till we get down to the nitty gritty next weekend, where it's really going down. You're gonna have South Carolina versus North Carolina this week, tomorrow.
Who do you have in your women's bracket that is a potential like either Cinderella story or just like on upset watch, because they kind of like dangerous if you get caught slipping against them? Is there anybody that like you feel like is on the come up that is not usually part of your conversation?
Yeah, so right now I have, and they're playing right now at this halftime, I have Fairfield beating Indiana. Indiana's the 4th seed, Fairfield is the 13th seed. Right now Indiana is leading 37-34 over Fairfield. So it is close. But they, again, there are a team that is deep. They're a team that is older than the usual teams that you're talking about. And they just work really, really good together. Let me show you their stats here. Fairfield. This ain't the right bracket. My bad. Here we go. Anyways, yeah, Fairfield going up against Indiana. Indiana is really great in offense. They're the number one. Indiana is number one in field goal percentage in the country. But again, Fairfield is just right there. They have their defense is good. They're 14th ranked on defense. They're 13th ranked on offense. They're 5th in scoring defense. Like they're under the radar, and you wouldn't think that. I also have Florida Gulf Coast winning today. They play against Oklahoma. But when it comes down to it, like, it's, to me, it's going to be, I think I have all four number one seeds when it comes down to the women's game, right? Notre Dame can, when we talked about Hannah Hidalgo, they can push South Carolina when it comes down to the Elite Eight. But that's the only one that I can see.
So you have Iowa and Caitlin Clark, if it comes down to it, defeating LSU.
Let me double check. Because their defense is really, what I think I noticed is their defense, Iowa's defense is really bad. LSU is not going to be there. If you're thinking LSU is going to come in, they're not. They're not that same team as they were last year. And this bracket is really tough. It's the hardest bracket in college women's basketball right now is the region, the Albany region. So I have here, hold on, let me. No, I have South Carolina and UConn in the finals. Who do I have? Yeah. So you have Iowa versus UConn in the Final Four, and you got Texas and South Carolina in the Final Four. I've got UConn beating Iowa. Again, Iowa, shout out to Caitlin Clark. She's a beast, but they just play no defense. Absolutely no defense on that team. I think they're ranked somewhere like, they're 319th in scoring defense, Iowa is. 319th. And I just don't think when you're going to play a team like UConn with Paige Buchers, they have a couple stars on there. I think this is kind of where UConn turns it around and can come back and actually maybe compete with South Carolina next year, but this year ultimately is going to come down to South Carolina, without a doubt. Anyway, that's our talk for the college basketball brackets. I'm sorry, I'm spacing out over here, but it's early Sunday over here.